I think, at least conceptually, to, I guess, defend the voluntary manslaughter, the lesser offense of voluntary manslaughter. Voluntary manslaughter is essentially lowers the level of culpability for a murder where there is, because it's extreme emotional stress or sudden provocation, the person may have acted as if he would act without that provocation. Duress is similar in that because of some outside third-party influence, some intimidation, some coercion, some fear, the person is not able to act independently and to refrain from doing the acts that he is charged. His culpability, his level of intent is reduced because of the intimidation.
What we usually think of duress as duress at the time of the incident, at the time of the crime, for example, that someone is told, you do the shooting or I'll shoot you or whatever. Here, the argument for duress is that the defendant was sort of under Santine's influence, afraid to, I mean, this is over some period of time, and that he was afraid to break away from this group that he was in. What's the law? I know we haven't spoken on that apparently, but summarize for me the law in other states on that issue, if you can.
I'm not sure I can summarize the law in the states because I don't think it's particularly clear.
How do we approach it then? How do we?
Certainly, this is the more subtle defense and a subtle influence on just getting than the classic duress coercion defense where perhaps a person is the third party standing there with a gun, forcing the defendant to commit a criminal act. Do this, or I'm going to shoot you. Break into that house, or I'm going to shoot you. I think it's the classic duress defense. This, however, is considerably more subtle because Santine has taken over essentially some role in Jason Getz's life and with all of these three young men. He has created a situation whereby through providing them money, providing them marijuana, threatening them, keeping track of them, keeping track of their friends, and serious physical threats that you do what I tell you or I will do for your family. He has got an influence over them that they don't seem they can get away from at any time, even when they're not in their presence, because it's an ongoing threat. Now this threat is compounded by the facts here where one of the three boys actually goes to the police prior to this killing. Richard McNulty, who was a paid informant for a year, I believe it's the Hubbard Township Police, went to the police and said, I have information that John Santine is going to have Chucky Serafino killed. The hitman is going to happen. The police don't do anything with that. Well, I shouldn't say they don't do anything. They do some investigation, find that it's not reliable, and they brush it away. But if you view this from the boy's point of view, from Jason Getz's point of view, in light of the fact that John Santine has told them over and over again and demonstrated to them over and over again that he has certain influence over them, he tells them all he can buy himself a place in the mayor all the time, that he knows what's going on in the police department, they no longer believe that they have anywhere to go. They've taken this one step to go to the police. The police have not done anything, and they believe that they have nowhere to go.
Sounds like the battered spouse syndrome.
It's not the
same sort of argument, same rationale. There's not evidence. We don't have the technical sort of evidence here.
No, Your Honor.
That too, it's the psychological phenomenon.
No, there was the only psychological evidence was presented at the mitigation phase, and essentially Dr. Eisenberg did say there that Jason Getz felt there was no way out. But from the facts and the arguments, just the facts that were presented at the trial phase of the case, there is some evidence here that these effects on Jason Getzey were such that he could not refrain from.
Isn't there also a lot of evidence that shows his lifestyle, that he bragged about his association, that he toted his own gun to this event, that he didn't work with his team, so he didn't have the correct employer relationship to be friends by? There's also an awful lot of other evidence in the record that this is a young man who chose this lifestyle and bragged about.
I think there's evidence in the record to demonstrate that indeed he had guns, he did money, and he had a large collection of guns. I don't believe, and I could be mistaken, but I don't believe there's any evidence that Jason Getzey was ever outbraid about what he did to John Santini prior to any of his acts bragging about being hit. And I may be mistaken about that. My reading is not that that's in there. And
you also rely heavily on the fact that when he's brought in for questioning and he starts basically confessing and telling his story, that he expresses a great deal of fear. But that's pretty normal, isn't it? I mean, he's just been a hitman for a guy who claims to be a mafia type boss, and now he's ratting on his boss. That's an after the fact. That's not terribly persuasive or direct when he knows that ratting on his boss can certainly lead to his own demise.
Well, it says, I think the fact of when he is arrested, when he is actually giving the statement to the police, our police have arrested McNulty, UDAC, and Santini. Getzey is aware that all three of them are in custody, and that McNulty and UDAC, at least, have given complete statements to the police at this point. And in fact, I believe, on the page, Your Honor, the police tell him over and over again, you talk about this, he's in custody, he can't hurt you in here, you're locked up in this room, deep in the police
station.
He
knows how the system works, and he knows that the system are very easy.
Well, and then possibly, I mean, it's the same thing. I mean, if he has this kind of control, and he has this kind of threats over Jason Getzey, when he's in the police station, certainly when Jason's out in the street, It supports his feeling that he doesn't have anywhere to go, and if he pulls out of this, and he or somebody is going to come after him. I mean, I think it rather than take away from the argument that he was afraid of Santini, it adds because, you know, Santini has...
What is the evidence at the time of the actual act that he was under duress from Santini? I think that's the real question in the case.
Under direct duress, as I was talking, there is none. I mean, the evidence is that he could not resist this because of the fear that Santini had brought him in. It is not something...
But isn't this what he does?
I'm sorry.
The defendant, isn't this what he does for a living? He's a hitman.
No. I mean, this is the first. He has never had any criminal participation in being a hitman prior to this. And in fact, as far as I...
Well, that's what I'm asking you. Was the duress put on him by Santini to do this act? Or
yes.
Was that duress at that time? That's what we should be talking about. That's the duress. That's when an instruction will be given.
Well, Your Honor, there is no direct duress right at the time of the shooting. There is
now
the first instance. But there is this ongoing duress, coercion, intimidation prior to that time that left Jason Getzey in a state of mind that he could not refrain from. That becomes a question of fact for the jury.
Counsel, in keeping with Justice Resnick's question, should this court be defining duress, what the sort of duress that can be considered in terms of the guilt phase differently from that could be considered in the mitigation phase? And Justice Resnick's question to you about whether or not it was imminent and constant at the time, should that be the definition? And I we haven't maybe squarely addressed this, but that that is the defining, if an instruction were to be given, it would only be given where the defendant were, had been under a direct and imminent threat, as opposed to your client, whose duress maybe fits better under the category of mitigation, which the General Assembly has even said is a proper consideration in mitigation.
Yes, but I think that it becomes a question. I mean, whether the intimidation is so direct.
Well, and it's so direct, and what might that be? Where in this case, if the Santine had, you know, threatened them, you know, taken them there. I mean, we could all envision a scenario that would have been imminent and direct threat. Do this, or, you know, I'll kill you. Instead of the scenario we have, which is your client saying, "Well, this guy's got a lot of power and gun,
and he is threatened
and big friends." All those important things, yeah.
He has threatened to kill me, he has threatened to kill my family and my friends.
But not, yeah, except he didn't, I guess, say, do this or you die. They inferred that from all the circumstances.
Well, I think he comes pretty close to saying.
Do you think?
And I believe on actually on the night in question, the night of the actual killing, the boys go and try to pull out of this, they come back and say we couldn't find an apartment.
Consider it in the penalty phase, for sure.
They did, but they were not permitted to consider it, given any vehicle by which to consider it in the trial phase of the case, as to whether this duress, whether it's psychological threat, or however they want to interpret it, whether that goes to his state of mind, his ability to refrain from
it. But wouldn't the law have to, you know, what we're talking about, how we'd structure the law on that particular defense? And at what level of duress would excuse, because that's what you have to talk about, not guilty.
I don't think you do have to say not guilty. And I think actually the law of the state...
Well, guilty of the lesser,
I think it reduces its burden.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think there is some case law in Ohio that says that duress is not a defense to murder. And it may not be. But it certainly may be a defense to aggravated murder.
But you have prior calculation and design as an element of this particular offense.
Yes, sir.
So we say prior calculation and design under duress, you know, that's what the kind of quandary you're in.
Well, that's the question. This is why it sort of analogizes the voluntary manslaughter, Your Honor. Voluntary manslaughter reduces the mental culpability, I guess, of a murder. In voluntary manslaughter, you say this is a knowing killing, but we're going to reduce the culpability of death because of serious provocation, extreme emotional stress. Under duress, you have essentially the same thing. You're saying that you may have an intentional killing, not at least have a knowing killing for murder, but because of the duress, because of the psychological pressure put on you, or the direct threat, we are not going to say that you were able to perform that against prior calculation or not, and that at least the jury should be able to consider that factor and say, is this truly prior calculation design? Is this truly specific intent to cause of death when you are under this psychological or direct coercion?
I assume that an instruction was proffered, a proposed instruction.
An instruction was proper, Your Honor, that asked for it, not guilty. But nevertheless, what I'm arguing today...
No, I mean for what should have been instructed in the penalty, or in the guilt phase on duress.
There was. The instruction that was proper by the defense that if you find coercion as a complete defense,
coercion.
You have to find them not guilty.
Right.
But I think actually the proper defense would be that you can find them guilty of murder, or you should at least consider this for purposes of intent.
That wasn't...
Calculation,
but the court wasn't presented with that in this case? It was only not guilty by virtue of coercion? That was what was proper?
Well, that's what they requested, Your Honor, but... And often there's some negotiation there about what the actual instruction should be.
Mr. Stebbins, I thought your argument on duress was aimed at mitigation and trying to set aside the death penalty. You seem to be arguing now that you want us to find the conviction not to be proper. Is that right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Well, and don't we go back to the first Williams case that says the evidence is overwhelming that he committed the act, and regardless of whether it was coercion or not, he's guilty of the killing?
I don't think there's any question that he's guilty of the killing.
Okay, so are you applying duress then to the guilt stage as opposed to the penalty stage?
Yes, Your Honor. My argument is essentially that...
So you would have us reduce it to just murder?
Yes. Or at least that he should be given, the jury should be given the opportunity to consider the evidence of coercion and duress in determining whether this is aggravated murder, prior calculation of design, or murder, or he was also convicted of aggravated murder during the course of the
killing. Okay, if we consider it in the guilt phase and find duress not to be a factor, then we don't have to consider it at all in the penalty phase?
No. That's not my argument.
What is your argument?
Actually, I think there is a real and actual difference between defense, which duress is a defense,
yeah,
to crimes.
Is duress both a defense and a mitigating,
yes,
factor?
Yes, it can be.
Okay, then if we go to it, accept it for a moment that it's a mitigating factor, proportionality is the only issue then, and I think the only cases that we have come close to this are Davis and Williams, both of which, as I recall it, the defendant was involved in some nefarious activities, as well, and the victim was. So I don't think they're really directly on point. And I guess my question is, all of the specifications under the death penalty statute are maybe equally bad, but if you looked at one that might be more equal among equals, isn't murder for hire, along with killing a law enforcement officer, and maybe rape about at the top of the list for weighing purposes? I mean, here you got an innocent guy trying to sell a business, and because he doesn't sell or he doesn't get it, the negotiations or something, and the buyer sends somebody out to kill him so he can take the business over. It's...
Well, I think it's one of the great facts in this case, a little different here.
Okay.
It's not that he was an unwilling seller. I mean, and he comes in basically strong arms out of his own business.
That sounds to me like an unwilling seller.
Well, I mean, there was no willingness or unwillingness to sell. I mean, it was just he took it over and threw him out. And Serafino comes in and sues him. And he takes an objection to being sued and threatens to kill Serafino. But I don't know. I mean, we've been, I'm sure, debate for some time, which is the worst aggravated circumstance. I'm sure we have perhaps seven different views as to which the worst was on the bench. Certainly, murder for hire is a serious one. But it is more serious. And the question is, I mean, can it be murder for hire, first of all, if you've got a direct crime, if he's being ordered to do this by the person who's hiring? I mean, the direct defense goes not only to the aggravated murder, it goes to, I believe, the specifications, the aggravated circumstances. I think that's a serious factual question. If Jason Getsy is under intimidation and fear of John Santee, is this genuinely the murder for hire?
Is it a fair comparison, because it keeps going through my mind, and maybe it shouldn't, when I read this, that the defense is, he made me do it. That was the same defense at the Nuremberg trials. Hitler made me do it. And they hanged a lot of those people.
I understand, Your Honor, but they were permitted to consider the defense. All we're asking here, we're not asking for him to be set free here on this. We're asking that the jury should have been given an instruction whereby they can consider this duress to them as it goes to the question of whether it's murder or aggravated murder, whether there's the underlying intent for any of the specifications, and for the underlying felony. I mean, whether the jury actually acquits him or reduces that, I mean, it's very much the same thing as a voluntary manslaughter case, where you've got provocation, where you've got some provocation, where I may not feel the provocation, you may not feel the provocation, but this person here, in the situation he is in, feels its provocation, feels its duress, that he has nowhere to go, that there is no safe island for him to escape what John Santini is going to do. That is the only consideration here, is that the jury be given that opportunity to consider that. And as you say, they may well reject it along the line of error.
But aren't the factual matters behind that lacking? Anybody can say I was forced to do something because he threatened me. If you don't have evidence to support your feeling from the other person, it just falls flat on the floor. There is nothing that I can see that the defendant can point to evidence-wise, fact-wise, that Santini, because he had done it on other occasions, made his fear real rather than imagined. There is nothing that I can see from the evidence why the trial court should have allowed this go to the jury. What facts do you present to me or to anyone that shows that this person realistically would do what he said he would do?
Your Honor, I believe there's the following factors in the record from the trial of the case to indicate that Santini did threaten.
What I'm talking about is the credibility of the threat. Can they say, well, I know he was going to do it, and my fear is real, because he shot a guy a year ago that didn't do what he wanted him to do. Is there anything that would give the threat credibility to allow the defendant to say, I was really, really in fear of him retaliating against me if I didn't do it?
I believe there is.
What is it?
I believe there is some evidence. There's evidence, first of all, that Santini had shot his own brother over some dispute such as this.
Was it because his brother didn't do something he wanted him to do?
The actual facts of the dispute are not in the record, Your Honor.
Okay.
But there is evidence that he shot his brother and received no punishment. There is evidence that he had threatened Getze and Nolte and Udak, that he had shot guns in their presence inside an office. Evidence that he threatened them with a gun the night of the actual killing. There is evidence that they believe, all three of them believe, that Santini had influence with the police, and that their attempt to turn him into the police would go for naught. They turned him in, and Santini was after them. I mean, there are some evidence in there to support what Getze himself is saying. There is independent evidence in the record to demonstrate that Santini was making these threats, that he not only threatened these two boys, but he had threatened other people and continued to threaten. I think Santino's actions towards Serafino support this because here he goes in, muscles Serafino out of his business, and then cooks up this plan whereby three boys are going to go kill Serafino for suing. Now, this is not the kind of rational behavior that you run into every day. I mean, this is the kind of behavior, especially from someone who says he's involved with the mob, and has all kinds of mob connections, that is going to put fear into these young men. You're talking 18, 19-year-old young men who don't know any better. And you've got somebody saying, you do this for me, you need to kill Chuck Serafino for me, and if you don't do it, I'm going to kill you. I mean, those are serious threats. He has demonstrated that to him simply by going after Serafino, taking over his business, throwing Serafino and his mother out of his business, and simply taking it over. I mean, there is some evidence, Your Honor, to support that. And all we are asking is that the jury have been given instruction, and they can weigh the evidence. Rejected, not rejected, but it should be considered.
Mr. Stevens, you don't have much time, but there's an issue that I think is seems to be important in your case, the mitigation phase. To what extent should you brief this? To what extent should we take into consideration in deciding whether death is appropriate here, the sentences that the other participants receive? I understand that your client, in this case, is the only one that got a death penalty. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Santine was charged and tried and, I guess, found guilty of aggravated murder, but without capital specifications. He's the one that organized all this, and Kitt did it for his benefit, and yet he gets off with whatever he got, not life, which is...
Well, apparently, Mr. Watkins...
I'll ask Mr. Watkins.
...say that he actually was found guilty of specification. To what extent should these be considered? Well, I think this flows from the other dress argument. Certainly where the one person who has put the plan of action, shall we say, the plan into action, who has instigated this, who is, if there's a murder for hire, he's the one who's doing the hiring. I think that needs to be considered heavily when determining whether this is an appropriate death sentence in this case. You've got the other two participants. I mean, admittedly, in the proportionality review, appropriateness review, Jason Getty is the shooter, at least the evidence.
I thought McNulty shot one of them, too.
McNulty does the additional shooting going into the house.
He got a plea bargain.
Yes, he did.
He didn't testify. Well, I guess he didn't even testify against Getty, did he?
No, he did not.
So he gets a plea bargain, and Getty is the only one that didn't even offer a plea, I guess. I think that's right.
To my knowledge, he was not offered a plea, and I don't believe Santini was offered.
There's just something on the face of it that doesn't seem quite right here. Maybe it's explainable, but I think it's safe to say that Serafino probably wouldn't have been killed if it hadn't been for Santini. He gets these teenagers to go in and do the shooting, and he gets off with his life, at least.
If I may finish this one second, I believe that's the problem with this case, is that you have one person out of four, perhaps easily culpable people, and certainly John Santini is easily capable of Jason Getty. And out of that, Jason Getty, who is under some compulsion by John Santini, whether it rises to duress or not to duress, to send us to death, Santini and the others are not. This is the type of proportionality and appropriateness that I think raises questions in this court.
Thank you, Mr. Stevens. Mr. Watkins.
Thank you.
Do you want to begin with answering my question, Mr. Watkins?
Sure. Thank you, Justice. Honorable Justices.
The question is that I just asked Mr. Stevens, that there seems to be, just on the face of it, there seems to be some need for an explanation as to why. I don't know if it affects the sentence or not, but here's Santine, who was the person who clearly was the mind behind all this, gets these kids to run, and kids are 18, 19 years old, I guess, and killed a couple of people. He gets off with his life, and the other two get off with their lives. Is it right that McNulty, I think, shot, killed one of two, didn't he?
No, he did not.
But he went in the house, I guess. And,
yes.
Okay. So is Getze the only one that shot anybody, killed anyone?
Yeah, well, I can. Police court indicated to you that prosecutors daily go through this process and have multiple defendants. In this particular case, we have four individuals involved in the conspiracy to commit aggravated murder. Each had different roles. The actual killer was uncontradicted if you look at the complete record and you even look at the videotape and state of the defendant, Getze. He was the only killer that killed the victim, who was a 66-year-old lady, and nearly killed the initial target of Charles Serafino when he looked right in the face and shot him point blank. And then went to the mother and said, "Die, bitch, die." This man, the defendant's on death row, is, from the facts of this case, the only killer. McNulty was out of ammunition when they blew their way into the residence. The other two would be Santini and Hudak. Hudak chose not to go in. He gave up his gun to the co-defendant, Getze. As a prosecutor, we decided that there were two individuals from the facts and circumstances of this case that we seek the death penalty. Those two individuals were, one, the actual killer, and two, the person that instigated it, Santini. He went to trial. A jury chose not to give the death penalty. I would submit that in every instance where we have multiple defendants, the juries are going to act differently depending on the evidence as to each defendant. In this particular case, justice was done because there can be no greater culpability, in my opinion, from the facts and circumstances. When an individual, in the end, chooses to take a high-powered rifle and a pistol and go alone to shoot a woman in her own home and then finish a hired killing of a son by putting a gun in his face, 357, and shooting him, and then returning to the place where Santine was and showed joy over what he just did. Further, there is no evidence, and I would disagree with Honorable Counsel for the defense, to support this ridiculous claim that there was duress in this particular case. One, this defendant did not testify. There is no evidence, zero evidence, to show under the law that this court has decided that he was entitled to a duress instruction. The witnesses, some of which were not involved in this particular crime, in this scenario, clearly show that there wasn't any intimidation or threats made of Jason Getze before or after the crime.
This argument you're making now is applicable to the guilt phase.
That's correct.
Only, yeah, okay.
It's interesting to note.
Counsel, I need a point of clarification. The attorney you're referring to when he drove them back and he threatened them, not, I can't find that anywhere.
That's not in the record.
I couldn't find it in their brief or
there is no evidence in the record to support that.
So the only evidence is he drove them back and let them off.
That's correct.
But no evidence in the record.
That's correct. And the other witnesses, one was a person by the name of Drips, when they prepared to commit the crime, there was discussion about how much he's going to be paid. And Getze was to get money. And Getze also had indicated in the record that he committed other crimes. Interesting in the record also, which is uncontradicted, that after they massacred, at least they thought they massacred these two individuals with an attack, high firepower rifles, shotgun, and 357. Santine requested that they change their clothing and take showers. And they go into a place on South Main and Hubbard. And each of them go in to take a shower after clothing. One witness said that Getze had blood on his face. And Santine, this person who was such a diabolical force for Getze, says, "Hey, get rid of your boots." At least two witnesses testified. "These are my dad's boots. These boots aren't going." So he confronted Santine right then and there after the crime and said, "I'm keeping my boots." Also, the gun that he used, the high-powered rifle, was his own rifle. Also, the other two individuals, one of whom refused to go in, Hudak, worked for Santini and had much of a direct, more direct connection with Santini. And he wasn't afraid to, he felt that he had to go in and do the killing. In fact, he did not go in. He chose not to take a gun and kill that senior citizen and try to kill that young man. Yes, he did. That makes him different from the other offenders. And that's why he was treated differently as prosecutors with court approval to do every day.
Most of the discussion with the bench this morning has been with regard to the element of duress. Is there any evidence in the record at all in the guilt phase, did anybody testify that I was under a compulsion to do this?
Zero, Your Honor. In fact, it says duress, this court said State versus Cross, there is a present, imminent, immediate, pending death. This fellow, when he's dropped off, is a residential area of eastern part of Hubbard, which is the Hubbard Township. He's dropped off somewhere around midnight. That crime occurs after 1 o'clock. They're in acres of woods. They're waiting to shoot out the windows and kill their prey. They're by themselves. There is no gun on Getsy. And as a matter of law, I hate to think that we go into some subjective test that in every case, hey, by the way, I had to kill this person in this crime because I'm fearful of somebody else. And that's why under common law, which this court quotes in State versus Woods, when you commit murder, there is no defensive duress. But I don't stop there. I go further. Even if you would recognize duress as a defense in Ohio for aggravated murder or murder, the factual foundation that this court set out of the State versus Cross for underlying felonies is not this. There is no evidence that any judge would ever instruct under for duress because there simply wasn't any threat at the point in time that he committed the crime.
When you get to the sentencing phase, did duress come up?
Yes.
And in the proper fashion,
I believe that considering the decisions from this court and from the U.S. Supreme Court, yes, I think so, because there's a statutory provision, and the judge was concerned that we're going to let that in. Whatever they had was let in. There was much more liberality, so to speak, and I think that's what this court said in its prior decisions. Technically, I think that there's an argument that shouldn't even be given there.
Well, it's the statute provides for duress being a mitigating factor,
that's
doesn't
correct.
It?
Okay, and he went forward with that, but right. Even at that stage, he did not testify, and there was no credible evidence to support that.
Well, in what statute did he go forward?
They had maybe a half a dozen witnesses, and one individual went into the fact that he was fearful, name of Drips of Santini, but that was inconsistent with his prior statements, and that person was also
was the jury properly charged in terms of that being a factor that he could consider?
Yes. Yes, sir.
Did you prosecute Santini also?
No, I did not prosecute Santini. That was a change of venue. Two other assistants prosecuted that and asked him to account.
And did he have private counsel?
Yes, he did. It was state appointed, but they weren't public attorneys. They were state appointed attorneys. I would also indicate that there was some intimation that the shooting that took place by Santini and his brother, and also there was a shot at the business. Getsy wasn't even present. I mean, there is nothing that happened months, if not years before. There is literally nothing in the record to support the rest of this case. And that's why Judge McKay did not instruct him.
Is there enough there in the penalty phase to make it a significant factor in the weighing process?
I don't think so. I believe there's nothing in the record support. If you look at current law, as I read it from this court,
Well, there was a motion in limine one point, and trial court asked the defense if they were going to present this as a defense. They said yes, and he said, okay, I'll let it in, didn't he?
You talking about...
Yeah, first of all, the guilt phase.
The duress?
Uh-huh.
No, the judge overruled it. And they made a proposed instruction.
No, I'm not talking about the proposed instruction. What? Wasn't there a motion in limine? Didn't you file a motion in limine to prevent any defense of duress?
I know we argued it. We may have filed a motion.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. And the court overruled that and said, asked the defense if they were going to present evidence of duress, and they said yes, and the judge let them do that.
I believe that's correct, but okay. They didn't do it.
Okay. Now get to the penalty phase.
Mm-hmm.
What specifically is there as a mitigating factor on duress?
Your Honor, I don't remember anything. I don't think there is anything.
Well, that's the point I was trying to get at, because when you search what you all have said to us and those parts of the record that are relevant to duress, it's hard to find any direct testimony on it.
I agree. And as I remember back, that's 1996, I don't want to misrepresent. There may have been one witness that said it, but I don't.
Well, then, is this even a mitigating factor?
I don't think so. I don't see anything mitigating about what was done in this case, and I believe the evidence is overwhelming.
Well, age is a mitigating factor. Age is a mitigating factor.
Yeah, absolutely. Ron is 19 years of age, and that was considered by the court.
Yeah, I understand that. So there are mitigating factors. I just want to know about that specific mitigating factor. And there was nothing there, in your opinion, to support that as a mitigating factor.
That's correct, Your Honor.
You don't think Dr. Eisenberg presents that testimony?
I thought that if you look at his total testimony, that it was rather weak. And in fact, he didn't have all the facts. In my cross-examination, I mean, he did not have all the facts to really understand the total scenario.
Thank you, Mr. Watkins.
Thank you.
Mr. Stevens, you've used your time, if you may take 30 seconds.
Just very briefly, at the penalty phase, there was additional testimony added on top of what had been presented at the trial phase of the case concerning the duress. For example, Richard McNulty's statement to the police was claimed for the jury, in which he reiterates the same type of fears and intimidation from Santine that Getsy had stated in his statement. In addition, there was several other witnesses who talked not only about the intimidation and the fear that Jason Getsy had of John Santine, but of his rather bizarre upbringing and all of that type of things. Finally, at the penalty phase, Dr. Eisenberg did testify that Jason Getsy was under duress, and but for the intimidation of John Santine, he would not have committed this crime. That is all presented in the record.
So that was all in, and the jury got proper instruction on their ability to consider that was a matter to be weighed.
That is correct, Your Honor, but I bring it up here for the court's review for appropriateness and proportionality review in this case, because this is, I believe, a serious question when you've got this imbalance in sentencing.
Well, let's explore that for a moment. The imbalance in sentencing is not all the prosecutor. They did go on trial on attempting to get a death penalty
I believe that's correct.
And because the jury comes back with something less, does that automatically mean that everybody else gets knocked down and then this is allowed?
I don't necessarily know if that always means that.
There's no case.
No. there is no case that says that if one gets in this situation, one person gets life, the other gets death.
It would be a different matter if the prosecutor had not just something sought to have the specifications or not something that.
I think it's a different case, but I'm not sure it changes it entirely. I think the result is what this case, this court, excuse me, needs to look at. Because regardless of whether it's the state doing it or whatever factor, if there's a disproportionality or some difference in appropriateness, I think this court needs to
look at. Do you dispute that the evidence, physical evidence, pretty much indicates your client's the shooter?
I believe, yes, that's correct.
Thank you, Mr. Stevens. The case is submitted. You'll be advised your opinion.